Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind. I'm Brian McCallan. Despite becoming blind at the age of 13, Eric Weinmayer has become one of the world's most accomplished adventurers. Eric is the only blind person in the world to reach the top of Mount Everest and every one of the tallest peaks on each continent. In addition to his climbing adventures, Eric is also well known for his appearances on reality TV. Eric competed on the ABC reality television show titled Expedition Impossible as the only disabled athlete. Along with being the world's most accomplished adventurer, Eric is a world-class athlete participating in some of the toughest adventure races in the world. One of these races was the Primal Quest, where his team traveled over 450 miles through the Sierra Nevada and crossed the finish line at Lake Tahoe in 9 days. Outside of the athletic world, Eric has won a number of awards, published a couple of books, been featured in 2 documentary films, and is a prominent international speaker. Eric joins us on Speaking Out for the Blind to talk about his life as a world-class adventurer, athlete, writer, and speaker, and how he worked his way up the ranks. Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind, Eric.
Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, too. So let's first talk about how you became blind. I learned from an examiner.com article that you were diagnosed with retinoschisis at a very young age. What is retinoschisis?
Well, it's a disease that's very rare. It's a juvenile retinoschisis, so it's a splitting of the retinas. It's a high pressure in the eyes, and because of that, hemorrhaging occurs and the retinas split away over time. So I was blind. Well, I started out legally blind, but I could see well enough to ride a bike and run around and play basketball, one-on-one basketball, and I could read books. But then I'd say around middle school, early middle school, things started to change. I went to a doctor, or dozens of doctors. Finally, one diagnosed me. I think it was a Retina Associates out of Boston. It was a doctor, Brockhurst, who said, "Hey, you have this rare disease, and there's no cure. You'll be blind by the time you're an early teen." So around middle school, I started losing bits and pieces of vision, starting with my central vision. So like I could only see out of the peripheries of my eyes. So I had to look way up or look way down or way sideways to be able to see. And just slowly over time, I remember it was maybe right before my freshman year in high school, like literally a week before I started freshman year in high school, I couldn't see to take a step. And I was like, whoa, this is like actually happening.
Sure. And after you graduated high school, you went to Boston College and you majored in English, but you transitioned into participating in those adventurous treks that people out there who watch you or listen to you have come to know and love. And the first step in this transition, in fact, I heard, was training. You had to snow ski, you had to get certified for scuba diving, you had to bench press over 300 pounds, in fact, 315 pounds. And you yeah. went on backpack treks with your father and your 2 older brothers. You went on this journey along the Inca Trail from Cuzco to Machu Picchu. So tell me more about these experiences and just what motivated you.
Well, I think it was in high school that we were studying the Incas, and I'd heard about this Inca Trail that you could hike. It was like a 3 or 4 day trek from this city of Cusco, this ancient Incan city of Cusco, to this other city that was abandoned by the Incas called Machu Picchu. It was a sacred city, and it was nestled in this mountain valley, and no Westerners really ever discovered it until Hiram Bingham, I think his name was, discovered it in the turn of the century. And so my mom had died in this tragic accident. And so, we were really torn up as a family, and we decided, okay, how do we stay close? My brothers were off in college and I was in college. So we said, let's have a family adventure. So my dad, organized this trip, and we trekked the Inca Trail. And I remember coming into Machu Picchu, you come into this area called the Gates of the Sun, and you're 1,000 feet above the city. And I could hear that echo of the, you know, that echolocation, you know, I could hear the valley below me, and just thought like, man, I'm an adventurer like Hiram Bingham. I'm like, you know, coming into the city, like this could be the first time this thing was discovered, you know? And it really captured that sense of adventure and discovery for me. Although I will say at the time, trekking was still very hard. You know, I didn't have any system for it. You know, I had a cane. Nobody told me that, you know, that you could use other things, you know, and I was trying to use a cane on this really rocky trail. So I would lean on my cane and it would bend and break. And so like, you know, my brothers actually kind of grabbed my pack or my shirt and they would kind of steer me down the trail. And I didn't really think there was much of a future in blind hiking. You know, this was really hard. And since then I found these trekking poles. They're adjustable trekking poles. They're actually with a company called Leckie. And I would highly recommend blind people going out and figuring out how to get a pair of these. They adjust, I mean, really tall. So like they can, you know, go up to your chin so that you can use them when you're going downhill, and you can adjust them a lot shorter when you're going uphill. And they're very sturdy, and it's sort of like using two canes at the same time and leaning on one and scanning the other in front of me to take a next step. Sometimes somebody will even hike in front of me with a bell and jingle that bell. And so I can hear them moving in front of me a little bit better. But anyway, and that was what I discovered down the road. But yeah, that first time was tough. Actually, it was about 7 years ago now that I got connected with an organization called No Barriers. And they run a program called Leading the Way. Actually, we started this program together. And it was a team of blind and sighted teenagers that we wanted to have go through this really transformative experience. And so we actually chose the Inca Trail. And so I got to go back to the Inca Trail 7 or so years ago and lead this trip with blind and sighted teenagers all trekking across the Inca Trail and into Machu Picchu. And man, it was really neat to go full circle on that.
And after you finished your studies at Boston College in the early 90s, you went to Lesley College for your master's in education, and you just continued these family adventures. You trekked from the pioneers of Tajikistan to the Karakoram of Pakistan. Tell me about your experience on this particular trek.
Yeah, we went to Irian Jaya, which is West Papua of New Guinea, and we trekked in the jungle. That was a really hard trek, you know, slipping and sliding over wet roots and rocks and mud. It was the people were really pretty primitive still. They were kind of still just emerging in a way out of the Stone Age. Like they still had stone farming implements and stone axes and things like that. And they were, they didn't wear a lot. They were barefoot, and it was wild. It was like being in this National Geographic adventure. And then went to Russia and trekked on the Baltora Glacier near K2, which is a second tallest peak in the world, and hiked in the Pamirs of you know, in Tajikistan and Uzbekistan, one of the old Central Asian republics of the old Soviet Union, and just had a lot of big adventures. And that sort of got me thinking bigger about, you know, what I could do in the outdoor world. And so I graduated from Lesley and got a master's degree in education and started a teaching job. But I'd already kind of started that parallel track of adventuring as I had that full-time job.
And speaking of that teaching job, let's get into that for a second. In 1995, you started to teach fifth grade students at Phoenix Country Day School in Paradise Valley. What did you teach them?
Well, I got a job. Actually, this is an interesting story. I interviewed in New York City for this job, and I interviewed with a lot of schools, and some of the principals or head of schools said, you know, I like you. I think you have good qualifications, but we'll never be able to convince our board to hire a blind teacher. And others said, you know, hey, you know, as a blind person, you're super qualified. You have, you know, 4.0 GPA. You could teach our kids, and you could probably even teach them something extra. And so I got a few of those folks, and one of them was in Phoenix, and I thought, wow, Phoenix, tons of rocks in the desert. I want to learn to rock climb more because I had done a little rock climbing in college, and I took this job. But what got me the job was the head of the school. She interviewed me, and then she told me this later. I mean, she said, after I interviewed you and everything went well and we wanted to hire you, I still thought about like safety in the classroom and, you know, like what if there's a fire or something? Is this blind person going to be able to navigate and be in charge of these kids from a safety standpoint? So I got up with my guide dog and I left the interview and I weaved my way through this, this really, you know, big convention center with lots of booths of different schools interviewing perspective teachers. And then I weaved my way out of the lobby, out the door, you know, and it was a lot of navigating with my guide dog. And she literally followed me. And she was like 20 or 30 feet behind me watching me navigate. She said that was the icing on the cake that said, hey, we should hire this guy because he's pretty physically aware of like where he is and stuff like that. And I had no idea. I think I would have cracked under the pressure if I'd known that. But anyway, so it was a good lesson for me that, you know, like your physical awareness and your orientation as a blind person is very, very important, not just being a good teacher, but actually being like aware of your surroundings and your space and the people around you. I mean, all that stuff is really important. And so as a teacher, I taught English and math to fifth graders. And I taught for 6 years and I loved it at this school called the Phoenix Country Day School. And I developed all sorts of systems. You know, I'd use a Kurzweil machine for reading their essays. And I mostly taught writing. So I have them hand in a disc at that time. There were still discs that you could hand in. And I would read their essays and their writing with my computer. I even had students come in from the high school as part of a community service project. They got credits and I said, hey, like, why don't they come down and read for me? And that would be, you know, a good community service. So I had high school students that would come in and help me. And so it worked out really well. And the kids in the classroom would, you know, take a role. They'd pass out papers and help correct each other's quizzes and things like that. I'd even have them write on the board. I'd have an assistant each day that would do things like write on the board and fill my dog's water dish and help me clean up the classroom. So, you know, I just realized, you know, part of a classroom experience is not me trying to do everything, but teaching them about leadership and about community. So having kids step up in the classroom and be leaders was really the ticket. I had, you know, like 30 sets of eyes to help me.
And 2 years after you began teaching there in 1995, you started gaining national recognition when you climbed up to the top of Mount McKinley. It's the highest peak in North America. How did you do that? And what survival gear sighted assistance did you use to climb to the top of that mountain?
Well, you know, I actually wasn't the first blind person to reach the summit of Denali. There was a woman who reached the summit, a blind lady. I forget her name now, but she was really amazing. She had these two sons who were Alaskan guides. And so, and she sort of set the way. And I had read about her and thought that was really cool. And, you know, but, you know, and not taking anything away from her, but she didn't carry a pack. And, you know, like her kids sort of helped her, you know, helped her get to the summit. And I thought, well, like, how about like maybe as a blind person, it would be cool to go and like actually climb a little bit like a sighted person, you know, carry a pack, help set up tents, you know, help cook meals. And so I trained. It was my buddy and I who got this idea to go climb Denali, and we trained. I worked on setting up tents, you know, like with my gloves on, and went to Rainier and other mountains and, you know, learned crevasse rescue techniques and how to be roped up with people on a glacier and learned how to cook meals on stoves and how to just be sort of comfortable in a really chaotic glacier environment where it can be snowing and windy and stuff. So anyway, we trained really hard and we didn't really summit anything, but we went to Denali feeling pretty prepared. And it took 19 days. We summited on our 19th day, 20,300 feet, stood on the top with my team. It turned out to be Helen Keller's birthday, we found out. I think it was June 20, 7th or something like that. We found that out later. So we didn't really plan that, but that was kind of cool.
In 2001, you made your biggest expedition yet by climbing up to the top of Mount Everest. Tell me briefly about that.
Sure. Well, I reached the summit of El Capitan in the 90s, which was a huge 3,000-foot rock face, and then climbed the tallest peak in Antarctica, Mount Vincent. And then in 2001, I put together a team. The leader of that team was this friend of mine, Pasquale Scaturro. He had climbed Everest once before and was a big Himalayan climber who could organize our team and all the logistics and new connections with Sherpas, who are the local people that help you climb. And that was sponsored by the National Federation of the Blind. And I remember them saying, you know, hey, we want to kind of do a facelift on blindness. You know, like, we don't want people thinking about a dark room when they think about blindness. We want people to think about a person standing on top of the world. So that was kind of cool because it was like blind people doing car washes and bake sales to raise the money to get us to the summit. It probably cost $250,000 to get my whole team up there. And so that was really special. And I felt, you know, like I was sort of representing a lot of blind people. And afterwards, when we were fortunate enough to summit 29,035 feet, I came back and I got this award. There were like 5,000 blind people in the room that all stood up and gave me a standing ovation. And I thought, yeah, this is sort of like America, maybe getting, you know, the first person to the moon or something. That's what this is within the blindness community.
It does. So now we're going to talk about you participating in one of the richest and most toughest adventure races in the world. In fact, it was a multi-sport one. It's called the Primal Quest, and I've heard that people died doing this race, but you've beat the odds and survived. You tried to cross the Sierra Nevada, and you just crossed that finish line at Lake Tahoe. How did you participate in these risky competitions, and just what drives you to win these contests?
Well, I got contacted by a nice guy. I was living in Denver at the time, or in Golden at the time, Golden, Colorado. And he contacted me. He lived in Boulder, and he was a big adventure racer, a guy named Rob Harsh. And he said, hey, you know, you've been amazing in the climbing world. Why don't you try your hand at adventure racing? And so I was like, huh, that's cool. You know, maybe this is another experience in life that I should try. So we went out and we did the simulated adventure race. We were moving through like Moab, Utah for 30 hours. And you kind of teach yourself how to have sleep deprivation where you're like, you know, you can kind of push through that. Anyway, but my buddy who I had asked to join me on that, he quit. He's like, this is miserable. So I had to find another partner. And so I went to my friend Jeff Evans, who I'd climbed Everest with. And he was like, yeah, sure, this sounds great. So it was kind of as simple as that. So we had this team of two experienced racers and then the two of us who were moving from the climbing world to the adventure racing world. We did a race through Greenland, a five-day race across Greenland. And I actually didn't finish that race. It was literally like you're running a marathon every day, climbing mountains and navigating along these super jagged, rocky coastlines and climbing up over glaciers. And I was just moving too slow and didn't finish that race. But I knew that the Primal Quest was a nine-day race rather than a five-day race. And so I figured everyone in this race is going to have to, in order to finish, you know, it's such a long endurance race, they're going to have to be turtles, not rabbits. So I'm a pretty good turtle. Like I can plod along for a long time. So that was literally our strategy, just to keep moving steadily. And that's what happened. We just, you know, started picking off teams. Teams would they just crash, or they would get terrible foot problems or Achilles heel problems. And we just cross and pass them one after the next. And we didn't win. I mean, but it was neat to be able to actually finish, you know, and only 42 teams finished out of 80. And so only half the field finished and we were one of them. And we paddled across Lake Tahoe and crossed the finish line at like 4 in the morning. Actually, my family came and met me at the finish line, my little daughter. And I was like almost hallucinating at that point. So I was like, am I imagining this? This little kid's like voice and laughter here on this beach in Lake Tahoe. And it kind of hit me that it was my kid.
Wow. So speaking of contests, you competed on ABC's Expedition Impossible a couple of years ago. And it's a show, reality show, where teams of three people, they race across raging rivers, vast deserts, and snow-capped mountains in the kingdom of Morocco, from the starting point to the finish line. You competed on Team No Limits with your teammates, Aaron, a.k.a. Ike Isaacson, and Jeff Evans. Your team finished second in the competition, so how did you just enjoy doing an expedition on television? And what was the response from viewers about your participation?
It was hard. It was a hard race. You know, it was supposed to be like a TV version of an eco challenge. And, you know, so it was rugged. I mean, I was working hard every day. You know, it was a stage race, so you actually get to sleep in a camp at night. But they weren't feeding you that well. And you're sleeping in the dirt, you know, with these sandstorms and windstorms. And it actually even snowed on us sometimes. You know, you're just running. You're running the whole way, you know, running over these super rocky trails and climbing and rappelling, galloping camels across the Sahara Desert, you know, and, you know, you're jamming, you know, powering down a candy bar, you know, like a couple times in that 8 or 9 hour day. And, you know, our strategy was that we didn't care if we won. We just wanted to do well and represent ourselves well and not implode on each other. You know, there were 13 teams. I was the only blind person. It was a Mark Burnett show. Mark Burnett's real famous producer. And he came into the tent right before the race started. And I was outside doing something. And he said to my teammates, he said, I hope I didn't make a big mistake letting Eric in here. And I think he was smart. Like, he's trying to stir it up because he knew that my team would tell me that and get me. So I came back, and sure enough, my team told me that he said that. And I was like, oh, yeah. I could feel the blood going, rising up. But anyway, we had to do a lot of challenges, like jump off cliffs into water and solve problems. A lot of the visual problems I couldn't solve, like count how many snakes come up, you know, when this guy plays his flute, you know, count the snakes. And if you count incorrectly, you're sent off into no man's land. And that happened to us a few times. We had to rally and come back. But one team was eliminated on each episode. So it was 20 days of racing, 2 day stages. And, weaker teams kept getting sent home. Some of the teams I had heard earlier had said things like, hey, you know, at least I know I won't come in last because there's this blind guy racing. So at least, you know, they'll get eliminated first. But a lot of those teams went home. Halfway through the race, Ike really hurt his ankle. So blindness wasn't now the limiting factor. It was his ankle. So we were plodding along. And yeah, you can go watch the show on, Julio or iTunes or whatever, because it's pretty miraculous. We kept just like getting lucky and fortunate and, you know, kind of figuring out the challenge, like, you know, right at the right moment and beating out teams. And teams would get lost. I mean, there's a professional football team that one guy fell off his horse and that was the end of him. He like really hammered his tailbone. And so, you know, again, it was like a matter of attrition, you know, and so we wound up coming in right behind the leading team, which were the Gypsies, really good guys, and coming across the finish line literally like 5 minutes before, but 5 minutes after the first team. And hey, we didn't win anything. You know, the top team won $50,000 each, but I thought we represented ourselves well. We took care of each other and we never imploded on each other. We said, you know, we're going to go into this and out of this as a team.
Tell me quickly about your speaking opportunities and the awards you've earned regarding your athletic work, really quickly.
Sure. You know, I got an ESPY award, and I speak to companies and, you know, organizations around the world. It's been exciting to go to Hong Kong and China and, you know, all through South America and all through Europe speaking. Usually I squeeze in a climb or an adventure along the way.
Okay, great. So let's talk about the future. You're currently in training to becoming the first blind person to kayak down the Grand Canyon. How's that training going, and when do you plan to make this additional mark on your athletic career?
Yeah, I mean, kayaking's been scary, you know, learning how to kayak, and, you know, the water's moving underneath you. So, I mean, it's like these huge waves, I mean, 15-foot waves, like, crashing into you on the side, and it's very scary. And so I'm glad that I've done a lot of these other adventures in my life to prepare me for this, you know, developing the systems and the technology and the tools and the team and that trust between your team. I don't think I'm glad I didn't start this earlier, because it's been pretty challenging, and it's been a very steep learning curve. But now, you know, I just got back from a warm-up down the Grand Canyon. I was on there for 12 days, did some of the bigger rapids. My friend's behind me with a high-tech radio talking to me. And, you know, make a long story short, you know, I think I'll be prepared to do that within a year and a half or so. I'll be ready to try to kayak all 225 miles. And it's not necessarily like I want to be the first blind person to do it. It's just I feel compelled. Like, I know it can be done, and why not be the person that does it, that throws yourself into this and makes it happen?
So where can our listeners find everything about you, your achievements, and just everything Eric Weinmayer?
My website is a good start. It's touchthetop.com. Touchthetop.com, and that's a good starting place, as well as nobarriersusa.org. And then Global Explorers is that organization I mentioned, where it's a piece of No Barriers that we work with youth, blind and sighted and deaf and hearing youth. And so, yeah, lots of good opportunities out there. It's beautiful to live in 2013, where there are so many awesome programs and so many things that you can get yourself into that help bring you to the next place that you want to be in your life.
Well, Eric, you've achieved so much, and just keep continuing to reach for your dreams, man. I know
Thank
that
you.
You've inspired our listeners who may just want to become the next star athlete or adventurer and just travel around the world. Thanks for joining us today.
Awesome. Thank you.
That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening. And remember to speak out.
You are listening to American Council for the Blind Radio.
By the blind.